Pete Sepp, thank you for joining us. We're on with Tony Colombo and Crane Durham, and this is the Annie Fry Show, where I get to sit in for Annie Fry, who's on a well-deserved break. Pete, thanks for taking the time. Tax cuts, the hysteria. What's so far, what have we seen from these tax cuts? What have they yielded, Pete Sepp?
Yeah, so far, so good. When you take a look at the business confidence index, for example, small business optimism about the future, about expanding their own operations, is at an all-time high since early 2017. And so the tax cuts have contributed to that kind of optimism. The National Association of Manufacturers does a confidence index as well. They surveyed their members, and 94% of manufacturers have a positive outlook this first quarter of 2018. 90% of wage earners have received a reduction in the amount of taxes they pay, so a bigger paycheck as a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That's because withholding has decreased already. You have over 4 million individuals who have received bonuses or extra 401k deposits or additional benefits such as child care or job training directly as a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. This is an important point to stress, Crane, because there are many, many factors that go into economic growth that propel the stock market, that contribute to investment decisions. These are direct results of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. These are employers saying, hey, we got a reduction in the corporate tax rate. We are passing it along directly to our workers. And even consumers are benefiting. Millions of customers from over 110 utilities across the country are seeing lower electric bills because, again, the utilities are putting little announcements in the bills that these folks are receiving saying, hey, thanks to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, we're able to reduce your energy bill. These are great pieces of news that, unfortunately, the naysayers would denounce and believe, well, they're only temporary, they're not going to last. Well, certainly other economic policies may affect whether these benefits are going to last. But right now, you cannot dispute the fact that this legislation is helping America.
What's the history of tax cuts in the way that we have seen them portrayed in the past? And specifically, it goes to the idea of attributing economic growth to tax increases. A lot of times we hear about Bill Clinton. This is one of the common myths that we've gone after in the past, Pete, I realize, but I want to revisit it only to get the truth out there. The idea of raising taxes actually created the Clinton boom. There's a lot more to that story, and it wasn't the increase in taxes, was it?
No, certainly wasn't. When you take a look at the fact that, first, George H.W. Bush did himself and the country no favors by agreeing to raise the income tax rate and other rates of tax back with a budget deal in 1990, well, Bill Clinton thought that it was safe for him to do the same thing, even though the country was certainly deepened in its recession thanks to those Bush tax increases. Well, Bill Clinton thought, hey, we're just coming out of a recovery. America can afford to pay more, so we're going to raise the income tax rate, the gas tax rate, subject Social Security benefits to more federal taxation, and that actually prolonged the economic slump that we were just coming out of. We were just recovering when Bill Clinton's first term came around. We didn't actually receive the economic boost we needed from federal policy until Bill Clinton said, well, maybe I need to reverse what I was doing. Maybe these tax increases weren't working out. He certainly didn't repeal all of those tax increases, but what he did was create a new child tax credit with the help of a Republican Congress and reduced capital gains tax rates on investments. He signed those into law in 1997, 4 years after the tax increase that he signed into law, and that set off a huge economic boom, which accompanied with the rise of dot-coms and tech firms, led to the first budget surpluses in over 30 years.
Thank you, Newt Gingrich. I miss you.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the reasons I was a big supporter of Newt Gingrich and understanding that and what it took and that legislative history. But with that, I go to tariffs and the concern over tariffs. I'm not a fan. I understand the upset, but I think it's a bad strategy. And historically, it has not worked out. And it causes more pain than you are getting in the sense of the relief that you look for in the way of enforcement of intellectual property rights, etc. Your thoughts, Pete?
Yeah, I'm afraid so, Crane, and the impact is going to be direct and very, very immediately felt. In fact, we estimated that these new automotive tariffs that are being considered on essentially foreign cars, but when you say that, that's no longer really a definition that applies anymore. There are many foreign-labeled cars being made right here in the United States and many U.S.-labeled cars that have a lot of foreign parts in them. It's not easy to say, let's slap tariffs on foreign cars anymore, because there's that mix of parts and ownership and manufacturing that directly affects not only U.S. workers, but U.S. consumers. And we estimated that on imported cars alone, which again, might have U.S. parts in them, some of them might be assembled in the United States, the price would increase by as much as $4,000 per vehicle. And for cars assembled exclusively in the United States, these proposed auto tariffs could increase prices by over $1,200 per vehicle. So this is an issue that is going to directly affect consumers. And again, it's not the same thing where Congress enacts a law, the president signs it into law, the IRS gets to do a lot of administrative rulemakings, and then a year later, when you file your tax returns, you'll feel the effects. No, tariffs are much more immediate in their impact, and we may very well see some negative outcomes, not only of the enacted tariffs, but these proposed tariffs, much more quickly, probably by the fall.
I've tried to go inside the numbers, Pete, only to be contextually and intellectually honest when it comes to the job numbers of President Obama versus President Trump. And I do see a lowering and then a little increase in the sense of more people coming back to the labor force. Tell me the breakdown of the touting of a low unemployment number into context, because when it was under President Obama, I thought to myself, yeah, a lot of people continue to leave the workforce. How and if that has changed over the last 2 years?
Well, labor force participation is starting to tick upward, and I say tick. It's not zooming upward. It's starting to climb upward, and that's an important statistic, very much so, because obviously if you have a 3% unemployment rate in an economy where there's only 50% labor force participation among adults who can work in the labor force, then that's really a false statistic. It's not indicating how many people are optimistic, who are actually encouraged to seek jobs, who believe the opportunities are out there. You're better off, frankly, having a 5% unemployment rate with a labor force participation of 75%.
Yeah, and so we've got to watch that, keep it in context, but certainly we've seen increase in business investment. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Pete, and yeah. Optimism and investment is a big part of that. So we'll keep looking out for it, but for information on these issues and how they impact our day-to-day lives, the man on the front line, NTU, National Taxpayer Union President Pete Sepp. Great to be with you. Thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Take care.